Chapter 18. To return now to the moment at which Anna, at Melchester, had received Ray's letter. It had been put into her own hand by the postman on his morning rounds. She flushed down to her neck on receipt of it, and turned it over and over. "It is mine?" apostrophe she said. "Why, yes, can't you see it is?" Apostrophe apostrophe said the postman, smiling as he guessed the nature of the document, and the cause of the confusion. "Oh yes, of course," apostrophe apostrophe replied Anna, looking at the letter, forcedly tittering, and blushing still more. Her look of embarrassment did not leave her with the postman's departure. She opened the envelope, kissed its contents, put away the letter in her pocket, and remained musing till her eyes filled with tears. A few minutes later she carried up a cup of tea to Mrs. Harnum in her bedchamber. Anna's mistress looked at her, and said, "How dismal you seem this morning, Anna. What's the matter?" Apostrophe, "I'm not dismal, I'm glad. Only I apostrophe" she stopped to stifle a sob. "Well? Apostrophe apostrophe, I've got a letter, and what good is it to me, if I can't read a word in it? Apostrophe apostrophe, why, I'll read it, child, if necessary. Apostrophe apostrophe, but this is from somebody I don't want anybody to read it but myself." Apostrophe apostrophe Anna murmured. "I shall not tell anybody. Is it from that young man?" Apostrophe, "I think so." Apostrophe apostrophe Anna slowly produced the letter, saying, "Then will you read it to me, ma'am?" Apostrophe apostrophe, this was the secret of Anna's embarrassment and flutterings. She could neither read nor write. As he had grown up under the care of an aunt by marriage, at one of the lonely hamlets on the great Midwessex plain where, even in days of national education, there had been no school within a distance of 2 miles. Her aunt was an ignorant woman. There had been nobody to investigate Anna's circumstances, nobody to care about her learning the rudiments. Though, as often in such cases, as he had been well fed and clothed, and not unkindly treated. Since as he had come to live at Melchester with Mrs. Harnum, the latter, who took a kindly interest in the girl, had taught her to speak correctly, in which accomplishment Anna showed considerable readiness, as is not unusual with the illiterate, and soon became quite fluent in the use of her mistress's phraseology. Mrs. Harnum also insisted upon her getting a spelling and copy book, and beginning to practice in these. Anna was slower in this branch of her education, and meanwhile here was the letter. Edith Harnum's large dark eyes expressed some interest in the contents, though, in her character of mere interpreter, she threw into her tone as much as she could of mechanical passiveness. She read the short epistle onto its concluding sentence, which idly requested Anna to send him a tender answer. "Now you'll do it for me, won't you, dear mistress?" Apostrophe apostrophe said Anna eagerly. "And you'll do it as well as ever you can please? Because I couldn't bear him to think I am not able to do it myself. I should sink into the earth with shame, if he knew that." Apostrophe apostrophe, from some words, in the letter Mrs. Harnum was led to ask questions, and the answers she received confirmed her suspicions. Deep concern filled Edith's heart at perceiving how the girl had committed her happiness to the issue of this new-sprung attachment. She blamed herself for not interfering in a flirtation which had resulted so seriously for the poor little creature in her charge, though at the time of seeing the pair together as he had a feeling that it was hardly within her province to nip young affection in the bud. However, what was done could not be undone, and it behoved her now, as Anna's only protector, to help her as much as she could. To Anna's eager request that she, Mrs. Harnum, should compose and write the answer to this young London man's letter, she felt bound to accede, to keep alive his attachment to the girl if possible, though in other circumstances she might have suggested the cook as an amanuensis. A tender reply was thereupon concocted, and set down in Edith Harnum's hand. This letter had been which Ray had received and delighted in. Written in the presence of Anna it certainly was, and on Anna's humble notepaper, and in a measure indited by the young girl, but the life, the spirit, the individuality, were Edith Harnham's. Won't you at least put your name yourself? ? She said. You can manage to write that by this time? ? Said Anna, shrinking back. I should do it so bad. He'd be ashamed of me, and never see me again. ? The note, so prettily requesting another from him, had, as we have seen, power enough in its pages to bring one. He declared it to be such a pleasure to hear from her, that she must write every week. The same process of manufacture was accordingly repeated by Anna and her mistress, and continued for several weeks in succession. Each letter being penned and suggested by Edith, the girl standing by, the answer read and commented on by Edith, Anna standing by and listening again. Late on a winter evening, after the dispatch of the sixth letter, Mrs. Harnham was sitting alone by the remains of her fire. Her husband had retired to bed, and as he had fallen into that fixity of musing which takes no count of our temperature, the state of mind had been brought about in Edith by a strange thing which as he had done that day. For the first time since Ray's visit Anna had gone to stay over a night or two with her cottage friends on the plain, and in her absence had arrived, out of its time, a letter from Ray. To this Edith had replied on her own responsibility, from the depths of her own heart, without waiting for her maid's collaboration. The luxury of writing to him, what would be known to no consciousness, but his was great, and as he had indulged herself there. Why was it a luxury? Edith Harnham led a lonely life. Influenced by the belief of the British parent that a bad marriage with its aversions is better than free womanhood with its interests, dignity, and leisure, as he had consented to marry the elderly wine merchant as a pistoler, at the age of 27 some 3 years before this date, to find afterwards that as he had made a mistake. That contract had left her still a woman whose deeper nature had never been stirred. She was now clearly realizing that as he had become possessed to the bottom of her soul with the image of a man to whom she was hardly so much as a name. From the first he had attracted her by his looks and voice, by his tender touch, and, with these as generators, the writing of letter after letter, and the reading of their soft answers, had insensibly developed on her side an emotion which fanned his, till there had resulted a magnetic reciprocity between the correspondents, notwithstanding that one of them wrote in a character not her own. That he had been able to seduce another woman in 2 days was his crowning, though unrecognized, fascination for her as the she-animal. They were her own impassioned and pent-up ideas lowered to monosyllabic phraseology in order to keep up the disguise that Edith put in 2 letters signed with another name, much to the shallow Anna's delight, who, unassisted, could not for the world have conceived such pretty fancies for winning him, even had she been able to write them. Edith found that it was these, her own foisted in sentiments, to which the young barrister mainly responded. The few sentences occasionally added from Anna's own lips made apparently no impression upon him. The letter writing in her absence Anna never discovered. But on her return the next morning she declared she wished to see her lover about something at once, and begged Mrs. Harnham to ask him to come. There was a strange anxiety in her manner which did not escape Mrs. Harnham, and ultimately resolved itself into a flood of tears. Sinking down at Edith's knees, she made confession that the result of her relations with her lover it would soon become necessary to disclose. Edith Harnham was generous enough to be very far from inclined to cast Anna adrift at this conjuncture. No true woman ever is so inclined from her own personal point of view, however prompt she may be in taking such steps, to safeguard those dear to her. Although she had written to Ray so short a time previously, she instantly penned another and a note hinting clearly, though delicately, the state of affairs. Ray replied by a hasty line to say how much he was affected by her news. He felt that he must run down to see her almost immediately. But a week later the girl came to her mistress's room with another note, which on being read informed her that after all he could not find time for the journey. Anna was broken with grief, but by Mrs. Harnum's counsel strictly refrained from hurling at him the reproaches and bitterness customary from young women so situated. One thing was imperative: to keep the young man's romantic interest in her alive. Rather therefore did Edith, in the name of her protégé, request him on no account to be distressed about the looming event, and not to inconvenience himself to hasten down. She desired above everything to be no weight upon him in his career, no clog upon his high activities. As he had wished him to know what had befallen, he was to dismiss it again from his mind. Only he must write tenderly as ever, and when he should come again on the spring circuit it would be soon enough to discuss what had better be done. It may well be supposed that Anna's own feelings had not been quite in accord with these generous expressions, but the mistress's judgment had ruled, and Anna had acquiesced. "All I want is that niceness you can so well put into your letters, my dear, dear mistress, and that I can't for the life o' me make up out of my own head, though I mean the same thing, and feel it exactly when you've written it down." When the letter had been sent off, and Edith Harnum was left alone, she bowed herself on the back of her chair and wept. "I wish it was mine, I wish it was. " she murmured. "Yet how can I say such a wicked thing? " Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.